Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
From the WEEI studios.
Brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Privacy simplified.
The home of the Red Sox. 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1. Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey station.
This hour of Fitzy and Hart is brought to you by the cleanup and restoration specialists at ServPro. Call 1-800-SERVPRO.
One can't help but be positive.
Cam Newton!
The other can't help but be negative.
Bleep you, you bleeping bleepity bleep.
The only thing they seem to agree on is that they can barely agree on anything.
Blah, blah, blah. I'm Andy Hart. I'm not happy about this.
It's sports radio for the passionate fan.
What's up, Nick?
And grumpy dad in all of us.
That is just so stupid.
Fitzy and Hart.
Yes, I've been listening, Andy.
On Boston Sports Original.
I like the way Andy Hart does it.
Might have Nick just take over.
WEEI.
All right, welcome back in. Brian Barrett, Kyrie Thompson in for Andy Hart. Fitzy is here. I'll be with you all the way up until 6:10. First pitch of the Red Sox and the Guardians. I still can't get used to that dumbass name. How do you come up with Guardians? How is that the name that they went with?
Because there are the two.
Because it's not racist and they need to find the least racist.
Right.
So it's like, so, okay, we can't be racist. So let's find the most innocuous and
just most
milktoast thing we could possibly
find. Benign word in the world. We are the protector people, the Guardians. Well, I didn't know
either. The Guardians is horrible.
I would have stayed with, first of all, Washington should have stayed with the football team because I actually, for some reason,
I like that too.
That grew on me.
I would have been good with that.
I loved Washington. Like,
I
started as a punchline, but the Commanders stinks.
It's so bad.
I prefer, and 99% of what Wiggy says is ridiculous in the first place, but I would much have preferred the Commandos at that point. He also calls Ramondre Stevenson Ramondo, so.
Nice.
Yeah, it's perfect. But like, Washington football team was great, and I would have been happy with Cleveland Baseball Club or something like that.
I did think Washington was onto something with the Washington football
team. It was
team.
Neat.
It's the only thing they may have gotten right ever.
Whiffed. It's the only thing. Daniel Snyder. Snyder or Deshaun Watson. Who'd you like to see out of the NFL quickest? We'll do that in the fifth hour of the show.
Well, answer's easy for me.
Both.
I'm not going to address that on Red Sox.
No, hour number seven of this interminable radio show. The Guardians are these statues on this bridge as you head into Cleveland. They're called like the Guardians of the City or like the Cleveland Guardians.
Oh, that's
so that's
corny.
How they went into it.
That's one of the corniest things I've ever heard.
But when you think Cleveland, like, no, I'm not going to go down like the road of like, yeah, they should have named them the Steamers. Like, you think about just all these things you associate with Cleveland. Like, give it something like intrinsic to the area, the people. Not just like, not the pierogies or something. You know what I mean? Like something, when you think Cleveland, what do you think?
Is everybody there Polish or something?
Oh, that's like the national food of Cleveland. Are you kidding?
Okay. My mother's Polish, so.
Like,
the Cleveland LeBrons.
That would actually be better.
The Cleveland talent.
Wait, isn't the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame there?
It is. The Cleveland Rockers would have been better.
Yeah, they could have done something with that.
Cleveland! Cleveland Blues.
Anything, but Guardians is, like you said,
it's horrible.
So innocuous, so blasé, just like this benign sort of like generic, like the Cleveland generic baseball team is what they should have been called at this point.
617-779-7937, the number. With you all the way up until Red Sox pregame. So Rob Gronkowski, of course, announced his retirement for the second time this week. And Rob Ninkovich, he was on with Greg Hill earlier in the week, and he had some pretty high praise for Gronk.
Sean, how did you describe Gronk during your lead this morning? The most dominant player ever in the NFL?
Yeah, the most dominant offensive player in the NFL.
You agree with that?
Yeah, he's a freak. He's an absolute freak. And, yeah, his red zone presence, his ability to block in the running game. I mean, me and him used to smash heads every day, and he was a really good run blocker. He's big. He's strong. He can go up and catch. If he's covered, he's not covered. And I think that's why Tom really loved him.
Okay, so the first thing I'll say is this. I know that Rob Ninkovich is friends with Gronk, okay? So I understand that. I also know that Rob Ninkovich has had a lot of bad takes, like last year, saying that he knew that it was going to be a two-quarterback system, Cam and Mac. Cam didn't make the football team, so he's gotten a lot of stuff wrong. But let's not pretend that Jim Brown, Barry Sanders, Jerry Rice, Megatron,
Randy Moss,
like these guys didn't exist. That take is hyperbolic. Gronk is not the most dominating offensive player that's not a quarterback in NFL history.
Okay, but how many of those other, all those other guys, the reason why I think this isn't just like pure Ninkovichian hyperbole, the reason why I would buy into it is because all those other guys, like nobody changed speeds or ran the way that Barry Sanders did. There may never have been anyone more powerful at the running back position, perhaps, than an Earl Campbell or Jim Brown, right? You know, like, and Randy Moss, just a pure, like, the speed is the thing. Like, sure, he was giant and he had incredible hands, but just like that speed. Jerry Rice, precision route runner, incredible catch rate. I get all of that. None of them also were almost like all pro level left tackles or right tackles. Gronk was able to.
Fitzy, you're not going to make the argument that he's more dominant than Jerry Rice or Barry. Is that where we're going here? You're not doing
it. The reason why I would buy into Gronk being one of, if not maybe, the most dominant offensive force outside of the quarterback position is because of the fact that he could block. He was a phenomenal. Nink is right. He was a tremendous. Like, how in the world could Joe Thomas catch 85 passes and score 17 touchdowns in a year? That's how Gronk was a phenomenal blocker. None of these other guys had to do that.
Okay, but Gronk's team also won the Super Bowl when he was hurt. Without him, as great as he was as a blocker,
they had a great backup that season, and B, the receivers were terrific.
But we're talking about Barry Sanders ran for like over 6 yards a carry in his second last year in the NFL.
And how many times did he go to the playoffs?
Well, I mean, is Barry Sanders playing 1-on-11?
Yeah, what is Gronk?
Sometimes it looked like he was.
If Gronk's on the Lions, are they making the postseason?
Like, does Barry Sanders play defense? Like, no. I mean, that's the thing when it's like, how many times did Barry Sanders go to the playoffs? It ain't his fault. You know?
Hey, you think if Gronk was on the Lions, they'd be in the playoffs every year?
I don't know. They almost traded him over there to find out.
I guess we could have found out.
I guess we almost could have found out. I see what you're saying. I know. Barry Sanders was the point. Now, you put Barry Sanders on a great team, and you, God only knows what he could have done. And look what the man was able to accomplish playing in the trash
pile.
He
averaged 128 yards a game and 6.1 yards per carry when he was 29. 128 yards a game.
And smartly.
With no line.
He and Megatron both stayed in Detroit, and they were like, oh, I could play longer elsewhere. I'm going to stop doing what I'm doing here because this team is going to get me killed.
Yes. And, you know, the thing is, like, yes, like, Gronk's all-around ability certainly puts him in that conversation because, yes, I love tight end blocking more than the average person. I love watching somebody just get thrown off the field. Mm-hmm. It is one of the most aesthetically pleasing things that I personally as a football guy can see as a tight end
or
a wide receiver. Who
was that?
Sergio Brown.
Sergio Brown,
by the way, played with the Patriots and also broke Gronk's forearm in 2012. So I think there was a little bit of a grudge to be settled.
Yeah, a little bit there. But I think that when it comes to dominance, when I think about somebody like a Randy Moss and how just hilariously easy it looked to him just to clown people. Like he kills Darrell Revis and then it's just like, hey Tom, like mid stride. Oh yeah, I'm burning you. I'm burning you, Darrell. Oh yeah, by the way, I'm open and then I'm gonna snare this with one hand. That's so funny. It's hilarious. And just the idea that like you could throw it up there with three people around with Randy or Megatron doesn't matter. He's just like, oh yeah, literally the originator of screw it. He down there somewhere. Just chuck it.
You know the play call in the early days when it was first Randall Cunningham, then Dante Culpepper. The play call was Randy, go and get it. That was the name of the play. They would just step back in the pocket, chuck it as far as they could, and hey, Randy, go and get it.
Does Gronk have a play call like that? Well, I mean, in the red zone.
Smashing and dashing was the play. Throw it to him 10 yards out and watch him do the things that he did, which I never saw anyone else do at least at the tight end or at wide receiver position. The play that you, when you start talking, though, about Randy Moss, and the, he obviously enters the chat as one of, if not maybe the most dominant offensive player. In 2007, that play in Miami where, was it Brady? Moss had like four catches and four touchdowns in the first half. Remember that? Stat line on CBS? It was insane. But there was one where Brady was in trouble, didn't know what to do, threw it 60 yards, and Moss literally just jumped up over everyone else. And the look of defeat on the safeties and the cornerbacks' faces, they were all like, what am I supposed to do?
Why am I even playing?
Yes.
Like that's the kind of stuff that makes you want to quit football. Then again, getting turned into a chalk outline by Gronk on a stiff arm also kind of makes you feel like, why am I doing this? But seriously, it's like, I'm here. I'm doing the right things. Like,
My technique is sound.
I am athletic. I jumped really high into the air. This guy could probably just dunk on a 12-foot rim, so it doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah, I do wonder, too, like, with the whole Gronk thing, how he's received, like, in the fan base now. Fitz, you're in with the super fans. So do you think that he has like pretty close to a perfect approval rating, or do you think that people are pissed at the way that things ended with Gronk here?
Oh, far from it. A perfect approval rating or a perfect
can't
Q rating in Pats
he
Nation?
Turned into a complete diva. He was basically a diva receiver by the end of his tenure here. And his brother literally came on this station, came on the morning show, and had the audacity to say that Gronk was paid like a mediocre tight end, when at the time he was the third highest paid tight end in the NFL, and the reason that he was that is because two guys just got extensions. That's mm-hmm. why he was the third high. When he signed, he was the richest tight end in NFL history. So the fact that his brother came on the station and said that was just so disingenuous.
It's surprising that that was the narrative in the family, considering that he ultimately was paid well. Now, there will be those who will say, well, Brady should have gotten the Drew Brees victory lap contract. Gronk should have just been paid whatever he wanted because he was that impactful in the second half of the double dynastic run, and players like that, as Curran calls them, planetary players, these unworldly talents, they should probably get what you want because you don't want to see them go somewhere else, and you don't want to see them unhappy. But as far as how Pats fans feel about Gronk these days, most Pats fans aren't thrilled with Gronk.
Well, especially like, you know, and I joked about it. I tweeted this out as a complete joke. He didn't mention the Patriots in his retirement thing, just like Brady. Personally, like, yeah, is it a little weird? Yeah. I mean, he thanked them the first retirement, so I'm kind of just like, okay, you can go back on that. But yeah, it's conspicuous. Now, I still heard however many people bring it up, and it's just like, it's petty, and it's like, it's a big slap in the face. And I'm just like, yeah, like, people aren't taking too kindly to this, you know? And I think that, again, whether it was Tom, whether it was Gronk, right? In the end, their Q rating is still going to be in the good section.
It'll be for everything
right. that they did and the dominance that they put together here. But by the end, I think you could see the signs that they were just kind of like, I'm tired of this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be me now. You know, I want to do what I want to do. I want to write my own legacy. And they went off and did it someplace else, you know. So I think that there probably is that element to it. I don't know if that's how you feel.
I think that they felt a little constrained by Bill. I do. I think that they felt limited, obviously, just by seeing the way that that Brady and Gronk have lived out loud. And I'm not just talking about like chugging tequila at a Super Bowl flotilla. I'm talking about like the parades, obviously, but
they did that show every week too.
Tommy,
like,
I was going to say,
on their website.
Like, the way Tommy and Gronky, which made me want to throw up through my eyes, was just absolutely insufferable. And I know that drove people in Foxborough crazy because any request they would make of Brady, he was always difficult about it. But now Tampa Bay values him. He goes down there and, oh, I'll do whatever you want. I'll recruit players. I'll do the social media.
Even social media.
And the way that he quote tweets all this stuff. My God, he lets his wife. How different is Tom Brady and how different is Tampa Tom versus Tom from up here? He lets his wife put out an Instagram story where he's in nothing but Brady brand underwear. And next thing you know, Barstool has a whole thing going on about, you know, like, oh, Brady's howitzer. And look at all, like, it was like insane.
Oh,
do you think Bill Belichick would have ever tolerated that stuff? No. Brady's Q rating still because he's Tom Brady.
Tom, a little cold out there?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. So I know we're going to talk about Edelman, but he's another one. I remember being in the locker room in 2019, right before everything, you know, went to hell with COVID, right?
And he was so broken.
So they win in week 16 where they clinch the division against Buffalo. And he you know, made a couple of plays in that game, obviously. He was struggling by the end, but he was just so downtrodden and like kind of – just vilified. And now you look at him, and he's funny too. Now he has personality. Now he's getting to show more of himself. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, that's what this vilified. Place does to you.
I like that. I actually like that.
It's a good term. All right, 617-779-7937, the number, with you up until Red Sox pregame. So here's the next thing we're going to tackle with this. More important to the second dynasty, Gronk or Edelman? We'll address it next here on EEI.
Your home of the Sox. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Sox beat the Guardians 6-3 on Friday night. Nick Pivetta the win. He went 7 innings. He gave up just 2 earned. Rafael Devers, Christian Arroyo each with home runs. The Sox and the Guardians play the second of their 3-game set tonight in Cleveland. It's going to be a 6:10 first pitch. Earlier start tonight across the Shaw's and Star Market, WEEI Red Sox Network. You can tune in to the Visit Massachusetts pregame show at 5:10 with yours truly. That's sponsored by the Massachusetts Office of Travel and Tourism. Josh Winkowski on the mound in that one. He's opposite Shane Bieber. I'm excited for that one because Winkowski has not pitched against a good team yet, so this should be a nice test for him tonight. College World Series tonight. Ole Miss against Oklahoma. You can catch that one over on AM 850. First pitch at 7 o'clock. My brother texted me. He went to Ole Miss. He said he's going to start drinking already. So he's already drinking.
That's how you do. That's hotty toddy. Gosh almighty, who the hell are we?
How do you know that?
I told you back in the day when I was doing the tailgate show for CBS Sports Network, I had one of the grandest times ever going down to the Grove and showcasing to people what it was like to spend a day there. You know who was tailgating there the day that I went down and filmed?
Eli.
No, believe it or not, Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, hey.
Has family that went to Ole Miss and was down. I was like, wait a second. I'm having beers with Charlie Day on the Grove. I have made a few good decisions in this life.
Not bad, Fitzy. Not a bad day. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler reporting that Jimmy Garoppolo remains on schedule in his recovery from surgery on his shoulder, and his timetable for throwing is intact. John Lynch has said he expects Garoppolo to be healthy enough to throw in early July. That's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Now, we're right back to it. Fitzy and Hart on WEEI.
And streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back in. Brian Barrett, Kyrie Thompson in for Ant today. Fitzy is here doing his job. 617-779-7937, the number. So the other thing I was thinking about, too, just with the Gronk retirement announcement, is comparing his career here as a Patriot to Julian Edelman's career. And which guy goes down as the second best player, but the most important offensive player after Brady. Is it Gronk or is it Edelman in terms of that second dynasty? Who's higher up in the rankings, if you will, in terms of that second dynasty, Edelman or Gronk?
I mean, it's got to be Gronk.
I mean, I feel like...
And I hate saying that because I think Edelman is wildly underrated for the contributions that he made for a solid decade. I also think Wes Welker is enormously underappreciated in these parts, too. One stupid catch on, not a great throw from Brady, or rather drop, actually, and everyone's like, ah, Welker, who? Edelman's the greater one. But it's got to be Gronk. I mean, like, he
Gronk
had to always
allows Edelman and so many of the guys to be what they are.
Yeah, but, he had to be accounted.
How do you account for 16? All the time? How do you account for 16?
I'm not saying Edelman's trash. I'm just saying that, you know, for the most part, I would say that Gronk, like, if you're talking about the totality of it, right, it's easily Gronk.
I just look at what Edelman did in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
$114, $129, and over 100, right, in terms of the yards per game. And he averaged almost 130 yards per game in the year they won against mm-hmm. the Rams. He averaged 114 in the year they didn't have Gronk.
So Edelman that year, Super Bowl 53.
Edelman that year, he was the number one priority for the defense, right? When you got to the postseason, they were trying to stop Edelman. Gronk wasn't available. So Edelman was the guy they had to stop, and nobody could stop Edelman on the way to that Super Bowl.
Gronk was almost done in 2018, basically. I mean, like how he was able to dig deep in 2016. Yeah, but
remember, Gronk only played on two Super Bowl teams. Edelman mm-hmm. played on three. Gronk was out. They won without Gronk. I mean, I'm not making this up. It happened. They won without Gronk.
How great was Gronk in 2014 in that Super Bowl? Now, Edelman was, too. He was a huge part of the comeback in the second half and caught the final touchdown.
Notice that we have only so far talked about the postseason, which mm-hmm. is, what, four games out of a 21-game season? So it's like, yes, small sample size, right? Sometimes the game changes and the way the defenses adjust to and take things away, right? So when they're both playing, right, you devote more attention to Gronk, and that allows Edelman to get off and do some more things. You're talking about when Gronk is not there, right? Then all of a sudden it's Edelman, you know, is the number one focus. At the same time, you have, you know, a balanced enough offensive attack, you can still kind of find a way to scheme your way around that. And I feel like, honestly, it's harder to take away slot guys at times because there's just more room to operate.
Yeah.
And actually, one scout that I was talking to recently, this is not related to Edelman, but this is just generally, like he's talking about Cooper Kupp, right? And he was saying, like, the Rams do stuff, like, for Cooper Kupp that nobody else is doing for their slot receivers. It makes it impossible to jam a guy off the line of scrimmage because he's lining you up 3 yards off the ball. And so you get a free release no matter what. So from that standpoint, I feel like it's still, you know, maybe a little bit easier to take thing to still get Julian Edelman his touches. I'm not trying to take away from it because, like, yeah, we're talking about, oh, yeah, which one's more important? They were both really damn important.
Yeah.
Right? But I still feel like, for the most part, when you're talking about the totality of the season and the postseasons, Gronk is the guy everybody is circling. Like, right. Okay, not saying that they're not circling Edelman, because they are, but you're circling Gronk, like, four times.
Yeah, he's the guy, like, prior to the game, you have to figure out, okay, what are we doing? Are we doubling him? Are we using a sit? Whatever, like, the game plan is, your first plan is Gronk. I just point out, like, the other thing about Edelman is this, and Fitzy, maybe you can speak to this, because you know a lot of the people around the Patriots. I look at 17. Yes, the Patriots.
I knew you were going there. Like, oh, yeah. Listen, Edelman's not in that Super Bowl. They lose that Super Bowl. All Brady does is throw for 505 yards, and he and Gronk were unstoppable in the second half of that Super Bowl.
Finished the job. But anyway, my main point with that is that 17.
Defense. Stop someone.
He stopped someone.
One stop.
What? Literally. One. Maybe if Johnson Badamosi or Jordan Richards.
Malcolm Butler might have helped.
He couldn't play.
Oh, yeah.
The head injury. He couldn't play.
My point about 17 is this, Fitzy. I feel like there is Edelman, who is both a Brady and a Bill guy, right? Where mm-hmm. he has allegiance to both guys.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like with Gronk, there's only an allegiance to one guy. There's only an allegiance to Brady.
There's an ultimate allegiance to
right.
Brady.
There is. So when Edelman is removed from...
So now we're playing favorites.
Well, yes, we are. 17... There were issues internally. Would you acknowledge that? We know this, right? Mm-hmm. That's when Brady and Belichick's relationship.
He doesn't get the contract post Super Bowl 51. Now he's mad. The family thinks he's going to get raked over the coals. Insert Guerrero and all the space foods and the exercise book and the workouts and everything goes. Yeah, no, there were tons of issues.
But hold on, my point is in 17. That's when the relationship was at its worst. Who was rehabbing an injury? Who wasn't around? Who could have been the buffer between Bill and Tom? Who was missing from the equation? Julian Edelman.
Mm-hmm.
He's the glue guy. Gronk's not the glue guy. Gronk is the diva, like, receiver type guy. That's what Gronk is. Gronk's a diva. There's no way around that. Massive diva. Edelman, Foxborough forever, Fitzy. Yeah. What are you going to say about that? Who was missing in 17?
Appreciate the loyalty. Appreciate the dedication.
So Foxborough forever. Come on. Cue the duck boat.
You know, I honestly was wondering, like, okay, would it be, like, way too corny if I was like, yeah, Foxborough forever for my, like, new daily, you know, Patriots podcast that's going to be dropping in a couple of weeks. But it's like, yeah, my wife was just like, don't do that.
Don't.
No, no, absolutely not.
You know what you could call it, though? Forever Foxborough. To avoid any sort of team meddling.
The name has actually already done its first in Foxborough.
Nice.
Got a nice little like yard marker and stuff like that. Official signaling a first down.
Listen to our coverage, by the way. Like WEEI and WEEI.com. That's where you need to go, where you can get like First in Foxborough, Kyrie's new daily podcast, or Six Rings and Football Things with me, Mr. Positive himself, Andy Hart, and Shime Time producing.
Oh,
like,
my God. You're talking about Mr. Positive himself. Oh. He is Mr. Positive compared to Shime.
Oh, no.
Love you, Shime, but damn, bro.
Half the time on the podcast, I have to say, like, show me on the doll where the Patriots touched you. What happened? Like, he's so, like, so anti-Pats, anti-Bill, anti-Mac, too.
I mean, it's funny because, like, I was sitting over here the other day across from Wiggy, who, mm-hmm. you know, might be, you know, captain, president, CEO of the Mac Haters Club. But I was like, it was a pretty chill talk. And he explained to me, like, it wasn't about Mac. It was about what was around him, even though I know that last year it was about Mac. You can't fool me, Wig. I love you, bro.
That his guy, Cam Newton, who he wanted to give a 5-year, $300 million contract to, wasn't there. Wiggy once... Here's why I can't seriously. He stared me in the face in the seat that you're sitting in, and he was here and told me Devin Asiasi was going to have an 80-catch season as a rookie. He doesn't have 8 catches.
Yeah, he also – remember he said he was going to have more catches than Gronk when Gronk's first year in Tampa. He said Asiasi was going to have more catches.
I mean
– he's had some really bad takes.
I mean
– you think?
There's some salt going there. Here's the other thing, though. I'm not going to lie. When I was watching that training camp unfold last year, I wanted Cam Newton to rebound. I wanted to see him be better. I wanted to see if there was something else left in the tank. I really did. And the thing, and again, I will maintain that he was not bad. He was not awful. I think people kind of painted it out like, oh, he was so terrible and he like lost the job. No, he was fine. He was fine. Mac was better. He took the job.
Bingo.
Right? And watching him play last year, I don't know how you could say you wish you had Cam Newton instead. Like that's just how I think.
You couldn't.
Personal vendetta, if anything.
I felt like Cam was a good Patriot. I mean, he did everything he could with that team that wasn't good. We just found out that towards the end he wasn't the same player that he once was. But yeah. I didn't have any issues. The only problem I had with Cam was when he said he was on that podcast and
he said the football into the ground.
Well, yeah, that was an issue. But remember when he said when he got COVID, he came back and the offense like moved on? It's like there's no way that's true. So they started installing all this stuff without the quarterback.
Immediately plugged him back in, and his first practice back, he was pretty good.
Yeah,
like he had a good day and all
but
that.
Something
stuff.
Happened like, in that Denver game. Like he looked so out of sync. The one they lost 18-12 in Denver. Drew Locke kept trying to throw the Patriots back into the game in the fourth quarter.
Like, oh yeah, Drew
they
Locke.
Should have won that game.
That
they
guy
should
sucks.
Have. Well, have a good time in Seattle. They should have won that game. And Cam looked something, you know, I mean, you could say COVID fog, you could say rust, whatever it was, but something, he may have looked good at his first practice back, Kyrie, but like by the time he took to the field, didn't happen at all.
No, absolutely not. Nope. And that's kind of like what I'm saying is like the idea that like, you know, oh, all of a sudden it just like they, you know, moved on and just didn't care. And they were like moving, like, you know, just like moving on and leaving me in the dust. It's like, dude, you're the quarterback. You know, like they're not going to leave you in the dust, bro.
They're not building this team around Hoyer.
It's like you had a bad game, and you know, then you had a couple more bad games, and things kind of snowballed from there. I don't know if now is the right time to get into it. Right, we'll wait on this, but I do kind of want to tease the whole playbook thing because Cam has kind of hinted that he put himself in a rough situation with like where he was with the Patriots and that he was like constantly playing catch up, you know, with the offense and stuff like that. And based on like some of the things I've heard about where this offense is going this year and what they were before, I can totally understand why it was hard for him to come into that situation with like no buffer, like for like between training camp. He literally just came in like right before training
camp. Yeah.
And then like, oh, he has to learn this on the fly. And then during the season, things get tough because he was out, right? Whether it's because physically he was off or like he just like wasn't on the practice field, right? Yeah, I can understand why it was tough. And I wonder if what they're doing now, you know, again, kind of teasing it, might make things a bit easier for some of the newcomers and even second-year quarterback Mac Jones to pick this up and play a little bit faster than maybe would have been able to do a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I get some suggestions, too, like maybe throw the ball to Kendrick Bourne more. 617-779-7937. I need to involve him more. Let's get to Thomas. He's in Boston. Thomas, what's up, man?
How you doing, guys? Yeah, I just wanted to weigh in on the most dominant player.
Okay.
You guys were talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of think that to be the most dominant player, you can't really look at a receiver. It has to be a running back, because you know these guys are running between the tackles. You know they're running against 300-pound linemen, 300-plus-pound linemen. And I would think like a guy like, you know, we set some pass players, but a guy like Derrick Henry, who's stiff-arming these linemen coming, running through the A gap, running through the B gap. I would think he would be, you know,
for a modern day,
a little more dominant. Yeah, a modern day player that's a little more dominant than, you know, somebody like Gronk.
I would say like for modern day running backs, I appreciate the call, Thomas, but like if we're talking about recent running backs, wasn't Adrian Peterson more dominant than Derrick Henry?
Yeah,
he did it for a longer time and he won the MVP.
Yeah, all the time
isn't
too.
He the last non-quarterback to win the MVP in like, what was it, 2012 or whatever?
I believe so. Yeah, it was a 2,000-yard season. He was absolutely incredible. I mean,
and he did it coming off a torn ACL, which is even wilder. And I'm not even saying this to hate on Derrick Henry. Thanks for the call. I think Derrick Henry's awesome.
Yeah.
Like he's hilarious.
He's a juggernaut.
Hilariously awesome. But yeah, I think that when you're talking about recent like running backs, which again, I don't entirely agree with it has to be a running back if you're talking about most dominant, because he's talking about the physical aspect, right? Is the guys you have to take on. It's like, I mean, Gronk's taken on some, you know, pretty high powered dudes, right, as well. But I understand the point to an extent. But yeah, Adrian Peterson, the way that he was just absolutely throttling people for like year in and year out, and generally staying durable aside from tearing his ACL and getting his knee shredded up, right? Like that dude is the running back right now that you look to as the top guy in this most recent era.
Josh Norman, who has yet to land from that stiff arm. Marshawn Lynch also.
Great
playoff running back,
still nobody
scored more touchdowns.
Yeah,
I know. Imagine if they had handed him the ball at the goal line.
Okay, so this is one of those things. I know. Yeah, it's like I know we're not going to talk about this right now in depth. I understand why you do that on that particular snap. I would not have called that play, and I would not have thrown that anywhere near the middle of the field.
In traffic, a play action pass.
I thought it was a great play.
That's the best play call in history. Matt Patricia would tell you the same thing. It's just on the defensive side of the ball.
He's got to respect the process.
How in the world? Yeah, could you sit up too, please? I appreciate that.
I mean, because
but how you don't run play action on that play, have the Patriots completely pot commit to stopping Marshawn, roll to your left, and have any number of umpteen tight ends or receivers standing by themselves in the corner. You throw that pass. If it's not there, you sail it into the stands. You give it back to beast mode on third and fourth down.
Yep. And
it
was such an egregiously
bad play call. Yep. And you had the timeout. It was such a bad play call, which is why it's the greatest play call in NFL history.
Yeah, but can we stop like with this whole idea, like, and Fitzy, maybe you're on this side of the argument, but like praising Bill for this? Like, they got lucky. Like, yeah, they scouted the play, but they got lucky. Like, Bill doesn't, he's staring down Pete. He knows what Pete Carroll's going to do.
Of course they got lucky.
He does not deserve credit for that.
But he deserves some credit for that.
I mean, for preparation.
For scouting and prep, but not for the
preparation
end game.
And coaching, but he did not know that play was coming.
Right.
Malcolm Butler realized that play was
Brandon
coming.
Brandon Browner realized that play was coming and said, hey, move over here. Get in this spot.
Yeah. And again, that is you can give Bill and the defensive coaching staff, you know, credit, obviously, for preparing, because that's what they do. They are a great preparation team. They turn over every stone. They've got every detail locked down, but then it's on the players to execute. So it's like when it comes down to the actual play on the field, like you don't get to take credit for that if you're the coach.
He'll be the first one to tell you the players deserve the credit. Also, shout out Ernie Adams, who was the one who I think either called that play in practice or had them write, or like told Bill about that, and then it just sort of trickled down. Great preparation. Long story short.
Oh, speaking of Ernie Adams, what happened? I thought Patricia was supposed to be the next Ernie Adams. Now he could be the offensive coordinator. What happened to that idea? Remember that was being floated out there?
First he was the new Ernie Adams. Then he is the offensive line coach. Now he could be the play caller.
Well, even last year, like there, he was like signing free agent contracts. Right. So it's like
they had to negotiate with Patricia.
Yeah. So now it's like, oh, Patricia's name is like, you know, borderline like on the is like on the check or like on the contract. So it's like maybe he's going to be GM Bill once Bill, you know, decides to retire. And now apparently he's going to be the offensive coordinator. So, yeah.
Yeah. What does Bill love about that guy so much, Fitzy?
This the does football knowledge.
That's yeah, true. He's a yes man.
He does his bidding. He goes with, like he. I think he likes the fact that he knows everything from the contracts, offensive line, offense, defense. Like he's just one of those. He's one of his guys who, in addition to like Kyrie said, will do what he wants. Knows so much about football. You know, and I'm looking forward to, or at least I hope that this offense works out to the point where it's not just constantly, what was Belichick thinking? Why is Patricia out there? I want this offense to succeed more than I probably want the reconfigured defense to succeed, just to shut everyone in the offseason up who has cast a giant cloud of doubt over what the Pats are trying to do.
All right, we'll get to that in a second then. 617-779-7937, the number. So, will we actually see changes to the Patriots offense? They sort of hinted at it. We'll get to it next here on EEI.
WEEI. We are right back to Fitzy and Hart.
Streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
We gon' be alright. Hey, hey, we gon' be alright.
Alright, welcome back in. Brian Barrett, Kyrie Thompson, in for Andy Hart, who's probably on his boat. Probably like 10 Miller Lights deep by this point. Fitzy is here. 617-779-7937, the number. So, on the table, if you do want to weigh in on what Chaim Bloom needs to do with the trading deadline, that's still on the table, or the Gronk-Edelman debate, who is more important to the second dynasty. But I do kind of want to look forward here with this Patriots team, because I found it interesting that during OTAs or whatever it was, where Bill essentially said, yeah, we did change some things with the offense, which it kind of came out of left field to me. Like, wait, hold on. The Patriots have had this system in place for all these years. They're actually going to make changes?
Why and, now?
Well, from my perspective, this is a positive thing. I was talking about all last year. There was no RPOs. There's not enough play action. I'm actually, and look, I get it. Like, this all comes with the Joe Judge, Matt Patricia thing, who's calling the plays, which has been, and I understand why, the hottest topic here in the offseason with the Patriots, but this has me feeling at least a little bit more optimistic about the offense if they're actually going to, I don't know, take some of the low-hanging fruit in the NFL, which is incorporating more play action and RPOs into their offense.
Yeah, that's what they need, though. Like, they one,
I agree.
One, they one, they need to score more points because of the offensive proliferation all throughout the AFC East and just the AFC overall. You're going to have to score a hell of a lot more points. When we walk into a season thinking, well, if they could just make Buffalo punt as one of, like, the checklist to-dos or
punt,
needs
punt
of the season.
Once.
Punt once. Just punt. Punt once. Just get Buffalo to punt once, if not a couple times in a game.
One
that
time.
Would be met. Just one time. Can I get one punt? Can a buddy just
can
get,
I get a, punt?
A punt? Can I get a punt? I would be a massive win for them. But play to the strengths of your offense. This is what, like, that's why I appreciate you having banged on that drum all last season. And it goes to, we were talking off air a little while ago, I'm not sure exactly how much to-do, if you will, was made here at the station about the Jeremy Fowler tweet,
yeah,
or the Jeremy Fowler piece,
yeah,
saying
yeah,
that an unnamed AFC executive said that they had the restraints on Mac too much last season. Okay, well, now it's time to open things up a bit.
Yeah.
And simplifying something that was unnecessarily complicated would seem to make sense, especially if they're going to incorporate more zone runs or Shanahanian things. But when we talk about the complications of the Patriots playbook as it morphed over the years, it's the Weiss, McDaniels, O'Brien, Perkins, Earhart, Belichick system. Like, every chef has added something to the cookbook. Guys like Christian Fourier will sit here and tell you it's not complicated, that it's actually pretty simple. But at the same time, like, you feel otherwise?
So here's what I would say. So Devin McCourty was asked about this. It's interesting because the last set of interviews right before summer broke, it was Mac Jones, Devin McCourty, and Jacoby Myers. And a lot of the offensive players have said something along the lines of, like, yeah, some of the terminology is different. I feel like people have really run with that a little bit too far because, like, you know, again, like some people have said, they're completely changing the terminology. I don't think so. Again, I haven't seen the playbook. I haven't asked, you know, Bill Belichick, and he wouldn't tell me. But I don't think they're changing things completely. I think it's just like, okay, maybe they call something, you know, something different here, and maybe you shave off a bunch of terms. So I bring up the Devin McCourty thing, and, you know, Mac Jones, I actually have this as one of my opens for my podcast. Keep plugging it. You know, no shame. No shame. But, I mean, he was saying, like, look, at the end of the day, football is football. Either you run it or you pass it. Like, that's basically it. And Devin McCourty mentions, yeah, I don't really know anything about offensive football, so I can't answer your questions about Matt Patricia and the, you know, whatever, and the playbook. But he mentioned looking over Josh McDaniel's call sheet at times, like during practice or during games, and being like, why do you need to say all this to call one play? Now, I think that, you know, like Fourier and people who went through it, right, and grew up, though I think that, you know, Fourier is a little bit maybe before they added so many different terms to it.
Wrinkles.
Like a slightly earlier iteration of it. So maybe it's a bit different from his perspective. I don't know. But I think that when you're looking at what they have been versus what they are now, Josh McDaniels, the architect of that playbook, is no longer here. Tom Brady, the guy who memorized this thing over 20 years, is no longer here. It wasn't a big deal to Tom Brady to add another term onto something,
right,
because he had the whole thing memorized like the back of his hand. But now you're talking about Mac Jones, who's in his second year, who had to pick this up on the fly. And you mentioned some of the restraints that were put on him. I think some people might view that as, oh, it's because he was physically limited. I mean, I don't know, maybe,
still
but
throw
but,
the friggin' football, yeah, 45 yards.
I think that maybe it was a little bit more of like, okay, you're still a rookie. Like, you know, maybe we're not opening up the entire thing because maybe it's just kind of hard to do. Maybe now, if you shave off a couple of more terms, that lets him play a little bit faster. And maybe that helps somebody like Devontae Parker, who just got here, or Tyquan Thornton, who just got here and is, you know, has plenty of other things he needs to work on, you know, to mm-hmm. contribute. Maybe that helps them play earlier, play faster, and be more productive now. Do you really need to have 17 terms in your playbook for one play? Do you need to have that?
Yeah, and it's a good point, too, because now, like, even those veteran receivers and tight ends, the Gronks, the mm-hmm. Edelmans of the world, they're not here either. So the majority of these guys are new. Kendrick Bourne's in his second year with the team, right? You mentioned a guy like Thornton. Devontae Parker's in his first year with the team.
Hunter Henry's second year. Right, Jonnu Smith, first year. Right. We're going to call it his first year.
Nelson Agholor, second year.
So there's not a lot of, like, institutional knowledge.
No.
So
you got Brian Hoyer, basically.
Yeah, that's it. So it would make sense that this would be the time to sort of turn the page. The one thing, and look, we can get into some of the weeds with some of the stuff, but the one thing that jumped out to me,
I definitely have more stuff I want to get into. Yeah, so we'll have to do it on the other side.
I'm here for the weeds, and I've got a 2018 reminder as to why this is a good thing as well.
I did want to mention this one thing. This is like the most disturbing thing I found from the Patriots offense last year.
What's your one thing?
So last year, second and short, 1 to 3 yards to go. Do you know how many pass attempts Mac had the entire season? 14. That's a passing down.
That's it?
Yes.
Unlike are we saying second and third or shorter?
Second from 1 to 3 yards to go. Mm-hmm. So that should be a passing down, right?
Because, it's always a passing
you know what?
Down.
You can always pick up the 4 yards or the 3 yards running the football on third down. Like, you should be passing. So if you look at it, 14 attempts, by the way, at a 108.6 rating, 2 touchdowns. That was tied for the 20th most attempts in the NFL. If you look at them running the ball, Harris had 23 attempts, the 7th most. And Stevenson had 12 attempts. So you do the math on that. 35 attempts, 157 yards, 4.49 yards per pop. So couldn't you have just waited to run the ball on third down? Like, these are shot plays. These are opportunities where you should be doing play action, throw the ball down the field, or whatever it is. That's, like, the easiest opportunity for Mac to throw the football. And you're trying to develop a young rookie in the NFL, that's when he should be throwing. So, like, the RPOs, the play action, all that, yes, they need to do more of that. But how about let's be a little bit aggressive on second and short? Wouldn't that make a little bit more sense? Like, that's an easy passing down you should be throwing.
To soften up the defense? Absolutely, it should be. And I forget who it was. I heard it on Phil Perry's podcast, the unnamed, and a lot of unnamed NFL executives, like, giving good stuff for the Twitter and the talk shows these days. But there was the whole, like, Patriots were super easy to defend. Like, it was super easy to stay mm-hmm. in single high because you knew they weren't going to be throwing the ball downfield. Okay, time to open things up. Change it up a little bit. Make it simpler so you can be more aggressive. And the one thing I wanted to point out before we have to catch a break, guys, was in 2018, I remember after Matt Patricia, Bill Belichick's Bobo, after Patricia leaves and takes the job as the HC of the DL, Brian Flores is the defensive coordinator, but not named. He's the de facto defensive coordinator. And Dont'a Hightower gave an interview that summer from the start of training camp, and he said B-Flow has simplified the defense, taken out a lot of unnecessary terminology. And what happened that year? The Patriots played great defense. The defense were monsters in the Super Bowl, and they made it faster and simpler and more aggressive. So when I hear, oh, we're taking out a lot of unnecessary terminology and streamlining things, I think back to that. I trust the talent and the guy that coaches the talent. I think this is a move for the positive.
And you know, one thing that was interesting, right? So I was here, and Wiggy was saying, like, well, if you dumb it down, it makes it easier to defend. I'm talking about the offense right now, the offensive play calling. It makes it easier to defend. But again, when you're talking about dumbing it down, what do you mean? And again, I think that for the most part, the base playbook, you know, and play calls are going to be more or less the same. Just some of the terminology will be different. So I'm not buying in personally to this whole they're changing everything. No, of course not. Because if they were changing everything, then why have Matt Patricia and Joe Judge even here? The reason they're here is continuity. There's literally no other good reason to have them in the positions that they're in except for continuity. If you were going to change everything, you'd have brought in Adam Gase or something like that. You know what I mean? So the other thing that I keep thinking about is based on like what I've seen them doing with, you know, some of the Shanahanian stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And people are thinking like, yeah, that would be a big change. It's not like they haven't run outside zones before. They do. They just don't do it as much as everybody else, right? These plays are in the playbook. It's not like they are adding things in that they have probably like never done before. These plays are already there. Now it's just a matter of, you know, maybe they're taught a little bit differently or coached a little bit differently, but maybe some are now just going to be called more than others, except for RPOs, which I don't know if I see that. I wish they would, because the stuff that you noted off air about how much Mac Jones did RPOs in college, I noted that in the run up to last season too, after they took him. And I was just like, you saw a little bit of it last year in you know, the run up to the season, but you barely saw it in season, right? And that's an adjustment that I feel like they should have made. But I will say that adding more bootleg play actions and outside zones and things, like, yeah, it's simple, but if it's run right, it's hard to stop. And there are a lot of wrinkles you can do off of it.
And Mac's really good at it. So, I mean, if you have a quarterback that has a strength, why wouldn't you dig play into that a little bit more? Yeah. All right, 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett and Kyrie Thompson in for Andy. Fitzy's here. We're with you up until Red Sox pregame, which comes your way at 5:10. So we will get into the Patriots offense. And a guy that wasn't utilized enough last year, to me, will they use him more this year? We'll get to it next here on EEI.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.